Young Turks, we have got a hell of a show for you guys today. Ranging from very serious stories to very light stories, ranging from really good news to not so much. I've got really good news in the first hour coming up in a little bit, coming out of the state of Hawaii. I have how much Bill O'Reilly got as he was leaving. It's not an absolute clear number, but it gives you a range, and that is not good news. It is stunning how much money he got for being fired. Remember the giant paycheck you got last time you got fired? All right, neither do I. Okay, and then why did 1,100 men show up to have sex with a dude at his job? That's in the second hour. And speaking of things that are filthy, later in this hour, Alex Jones goes pantless. I didn't make him do it. Okay. But I might subject you to it. Okay, so and a little bit later, perhaps in the segment or the second segment, another media attack against Bernie Sanders. Here we go again. Okay, so first let's start with a no. Let me start by noting two things. One is happy 420, everybody. Okay, today was a day that I've got a dress shirt on, but I was wearing this earlier in the day. I'm not saying anything. Federal government, I haven't said a word. I'm just saying at shoptyt.com, there's a what, 42% off sale? Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Seems a bit steep to me. If I was you, I'd go nuts right now. Shoptyt.com, I didn't authorize it. Yet another unauthorized sale. Okay, and secondly, very important, on TYT Politics at 5:30 p.m. Eastern today, Jordan is covering another town hall. This is the town hall for the mayor of Flint, and Jordan is there. Last time Jordan did a town hall, it led to an encampment, an official group of folks protesting outside, and it was amazing, and it continues to be amazing. So don't miss that as well. I'll continue to update you on that as we go along in the show. Okay, now let's get started with a fun little story here. Okay, so here we go. This is what America has become. Sarah Palin visited the White House to see Donald Trump, her old friend. Now, she had wanted to visit in a more official capacity, both in 2008 when she would have had an office nearby, but also when she backed Donald Trump, she of course wanted to have some sort of government position, as did Newt Gingrich and Rudy Giuliani and Chris Christie. All these people who gave political fealty to Donald Trump got squat. They got a photo opportunity. Cold hard cash rules the day, so everyone who gave campaign donations in the millions got cabinet positions. Sarah Palin got, well, I don't know if she considers it a happy or a sad day, as she got a picture with Ted Nugent and Kid Rock at the Oval Office. So there's the picture right there. Kid Rock's wife and Nugent's wife are also there. And congratulations, America, this is what you voted for. So, of course, on Twitter, there's a lot of people who wait, and I'll just give you a couple here. Catherine Kruger says, so this is what hell looks like. And then John Favreau used to work with the Obama White House with my favorite one, and he says, this is the day that Donald Trump became president. Mocking all the people in the mainstream media who've been saying that about him. To me, as we look at that picture, it is worth 1,000 words. I mean, first of all, you've got the conservatives who say that they hate liberal Hollywood, but the minute there's anyone who is vaguely a celebrity, they love surrounding themselves with it, including the guy in the middle who is a reality show host. And their other demigod in the Republicans, the other president, was an actor. So they love, love, love celebrities. They just get the most loser variety. To be fair, Kid Rock's fairly large. Ted Nugent, on the other hand, is mainly known for crapping his pants to get out of Vietnam. So, and I believe his song about how he's a child molester and wants to sleep with someone's daughter nearby, which Mike Huckabee, who a very family values oriented former governor of Arkansas and pastor, sang with him. So then we've got in that same picture, they say they're strong on defense, but wait a minute, Donald Trump got 5 deferments out of Vietnam, including for a bone spur he can no longer locate on his body. He can't tell if it's on his right foot or his left foot because it never existed. His daddy got a doctor to write that note. And of course, Nugent, as I just told you, crapped his pants. And by the way, that is literal, and Ted Nugent is the one who said it. He said that he pooped in his pants and kept it there for about a week before he showed up so that he can get a mental deferment out of Vietnam. Well, one thing we do agree on is that he is mental, but that's the kind of coward that Ted Nugent is, and then they brag about it as if they're tough guys. And then I remember when I was growing up, the Republicans said that they were the smart, rational ones, and liberals acted out of emotion. Let me see the picture one last time. I think that we might have dispelled that notion once and for all. America, this is what you voted for, stewing it as if you're Ted Nugent's pants, because that's kind of what's happened to the Oval Office. I believe they talked about morality in the Oval Office. You remember when the Republicans talk about that? How many people have, all right, harassed folks, sung about molestation, shit their pants, grabbed people's genitals? Welcome to the Republican Party. Okay. Now, that was a cute little story. Now let's go to a fascinating development in the world of politics. Yesterday, we told you that the person who's in charge of the House Oversight Committee, Jason Chaffetz, a very right-wing Republican from Utah, decided that he was going to get out of Dodge. He was going to leave Congress at the end of this term. Now, that's very curious. He's a fairly well-known, I guess, among in Republican circles, considered a rising star. He had a lot of ambition. Why is he getting out of politics? Well, we suspected that he's probably going to go back in, probably run for governor of Utah in 2020, and wants to make a couple million bucks as a lobbyist because he loves the corruption in Washington while pretending to be a Tea Party guy who wants to drain the swamp. So that's standard fare. But at the end of our report yesterday, I also said this.
But to do it within 2 months of this term, that's curious. Mm-hmm. So that's the only part that makes me go, I don't know if it's just to go grab the couple million bucks before he runs for governor. Maybe he knows something we don't know, and this is him pulling the shoe, going, I'm out of here, man. I didn't do any of it. If he says from going forward, now that I'm leaving Congress, I'm not sure if I'm the right guy for oversight. Maybe Paul Ryan, and to help the party, should find someone who's going to stay around. Then you know he definitely knows something we don't know, and he's trying to get the hell out of Dodge before that thing blows up on Trump and the Republican Party.
Well, it didn't take long, did it? Here we are today, and he's getting out of Dodge. He told a radio host, quote, I will continue to weigh the options, but I might depart early. So in case you're confused, what do you mean? Didn't he just announce yesterday that he's going to leave? Yes, but normally you would leave at the end of your term. In the House, they're 2-year terms. They're just 2 months into this term. He's saying, no, I might pull the chute and get out right now. Now, what's the hurry, big guy? I mean, I know you want to cash in, but you got plenty of time to cash in before you run again. That's not the issue, as I just told you yesterday. And that's why I like doing these things ahead of time. I said, look, we'll see, right? So if it turns out, no, he stays as oversight chairman for the next year and a half and then leaves normally, well, then, you know, then there, I guess there was nothing to the investigations of Trump, and that wasn't the issue for Chaffetz. He just wanted to get paid as a lobbyist, etc. That would be normal, right? It's terrible, but normal. I said, or before we knew, or he's going to leave right away because he doesn't want to stay as oversight chairman because there's a disaster coming down the road, and he's either going to have to crucify Trump as the oversight chairman or cover up for him, and neither one of those things is politically advantageous to Jason Chaffetz. And then one day later, we have our answer. He's leaving. He's got to get out of that chair position for oversight. When they asked him why, he told Fox 13, well, when I contemplate another 200 nights away from home, it is just too much. Now, all those nights away from home when he was a congressman for all these years was not a problem. He loved it. He was like, oh, Utah, let's go to Washington, have some fun, right? Back then, the family, not as relevant, not a big deal at all. But now that all of a sudden he's got to get out before he is stuck either way. Oh, the family, I just remembered, I've got a family. Oh, why didn't I remember this earlier? I got to get home. I got to go. I definitely don't want this oversight position if this thing's going to explode. I mean, family. Oh, my aunt? I haven't seen my great uncle in years. I got to go back to Utah. So, oh boy. Whatever those guys. Remember, Devin Nunes, the intelligence chair, the other guy who was supposed to investigate Trump, was so on Trump's side in the cover-up that it created ethical issues and he's gotten the boot. Sessions is the head of the Justice Department, so he's supposed to enforce the law. He has so much ethical conflicts of interest, he had to recuse himself from the Russian investigation. Nobody wants to touch this thing. So there's an excellent chance all these guys know something that the public doesn't know, which is this thing is set to explode. Tick tock, tick tock. Okay, let's see how it develops. All right, next. Oh, this is one of my favorite stories. Oh, I love this story. Okay. Time magazine has their 100 most influential people list out, and they have decided to put one of the largest Republican donors on that list, Rebecca Mercer. Now, this makes a lot of sense because those Republican donors are enormously influential. So by legally bribing one politician after another, including the president, they have gained tremendous power and influence. So she certainly belongs on that list. Here's the fun part of the story. They got Ted Cruz to write her segment in the magazine. And it is so wonderfully fawning. It is hilarious. First, let me give you context. The Mercer family, that's Robert Mercer, her dad, and Rebecca Mercer. Robert Mercer is involved in the financial industry, has made a fortune there, and would not like to get taxed. No, he would like lower taxes. He would like less regulation on Wall Street. But he says it's because he loves freedom. I'm sure he does. He also loves his pocketbook, and he also loves you not looking into what he's doing on Wall Street. But those are just coincidences that they happen to match up. So when Ted Cruz was first running for president, the Mercer family gave him $11 million. Now, that's at a point where we haven't had any primaries yet, and they put their bet on Cruz and said, now here's a guy that we know will be a good little errand boy. And we tell him deregulate Wall Street, he'll pretend to do it for freedom. Okay, when we tell him to lower our taxes, he'll pretend it's for the middle class. Now that is a boy who will listen to us. Be a good boy, Ted. And he was for a while, but then they realized he was a loser and he got his ass kicked by Donald Trump. So they switched teams. Logical, they need to own the president. So they went to Donald Trump and gave him $13.5 million after the $11 million that they had given to Ted Cruz. Now, Ted Cruz famously did not endorse Donald Trump at the Republican convention. I'm going to come back to that because the Mercers were not pleased. And then he immediately amended his position. Oh, that was so much fun. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. But now, of course, he has come back around. Like, oh yes, of course, Mr. Mercer, Mrs. Mercer, Miss Mercer, of course. Donald Trump is a wonderful president, isn't he? Can I please get more money, please?
Bitch.
Okay, so here's what he wrote up for Time Magazine. Rebecca Mercer is a warrior and a patriot. Okay, but like, when was she a warrior? And how is reduce my taxes so I can save tens, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars that is not going to go towards your kids' education or your bridges or your schools or your hospitals? How is that a patriot? That seems greedy to me. But of course, he's going to talk about her in fawning style. That's just the beginning. Let's go further. She's the daughter of a brilliant mathematician, a tremendously successful investor, and blessed with her own deep intelligence and intuitive insight, and it would have been simple for her to have settled into a life of comfort and ease. And what is she doing instead? Has she joined Doctors Without Borders? Is she helping refugees in Lebanon? What is she doing? Has she endangered herself? Is she in the jungle somewhere trying to cure disease? What is going on that I didn't catch on? No, instead she's gotten out there and gone and given legal bribes to all of us Republicans so that she could have even more money. Oh, what a patriot. She could have just had comfort and ease, but instead she wanted more comfort and more ease. What an American. I'm on the verge of tears to hear, Ted. You know, you are a good order. Well, anyway, let me leave it at that. He goes on to say, but Becca cares too much about freedom and our nation to do so. No, she fights. She fights for lower taxes for the rich and less regulation of Wall Street. Sometimes she even gets up off of her couch in the middle of her mansion to do so, to write a check for me or Donald and other Republicans that her and her father have bought for their own gain. I mean, freedom. This is moving indeed. Well, what did she do to fight for freedom? She gave, quote, fueled a political revolution. Well, Ted, how did she fuel it? Did she get out there and do protests? Did she go out there and register voters? What did she? Oh no, she just gave tens of millions of dollars. I see, I see. He goes on to say, Becca has helped transform the world of politics. Well, that's true. When he talked about fueling a political revolution, he was talking about the 11 million she gave him. And when he talked about transforming the world of politics, that was the 13.5 million that she gave Trump. So these are the words that he's, by the way, he later actually literally said that. So he clarified, making my job a little bit easier. Now, when Ted Cruz, now come back to when Ted Cruz, it was still a little bit bitter, because remember, Donald Trump unmanned him. He talked about his wife being unattractive. He talked about how she was corrupt for working at Goldman Sachs. That was, of course, before he filled about a third of his cabinet with Goldman Sachs appointees. He talked about how his father was a murderer, might have been involved in the JFK assassination. It was an open-handed slap, boy. So for a minute, Ted Cruz went up on that stage at the RNC and said, hey, vote your conscience, and did not endorse Donald Trump. And the Mercers were not pleased. This is not what they had purchased. So they said at the time, last summer and again this year, Senator Ted Cruz pledged to support the candidacy of the nominee of the Republican Party, whomever that nominee might be. We are profoundly disappointed that on Wednesday night, he chose to disregard this pledge. He went to their suite at the convention and they slammed the door in his face. So what did Ted Cruz, man of principle, do? Now this is a true fighter for the cause of freedom. So he is going to vote his conscience, act his conscience, and he was never going to support Donald Trump. Or this happened instead. My favorite picture of all time. Know your role. You're not in charge of anything. You don't have any principles. Your job is to be an errand boy for Robert and Rebecca Mercer. Job well done, little boy. So now, because you were so groveling and so pathetic, when time came by and said, hey, Mr. Orator, would you like to give an oration for Rebecca Mercer? He said, oh yes, I would. She is a warrior and a patriot. Please fund my next campaign. I mean, fight for freedom. This is the big principled conservative. It's both disgusting. It makes you want to avert your gaze, like, oh man, you can barely look at that picture. Conservatives, this is the guy you're proud of? This is the guy that you think not only has principle, but is a real fighter, has courage, has convictions? Does this guy look like he's got convictions? There's only one conviction Ted Cruz has. That is, I will serve the highest bidder. And right now, the Mercers are the highest bidders. Good boy, Ted. Good boy. Sick. Okay, that's what I think of Ted Cruz. Maybe they should run that in Texas somewhere. Let me just, you know, before we leave the story, imagine if the Democrats ran that campaign against Ted Cruz next time he went up for re-election. You're telling me that wouldn't break his back? Man, I almost want to move down to Texas and run against him. And then afterwards, I'd like to ask him, I was wondering what would break first, the spirit or your body? Well, your spirit was broken a long time ago, Ted. Now, why don't the Democrats run campaigns like this? Because they have the same kind of donors. You must not touch the donors, even though it would lead to political victories and policy victories. You don't care about policy victories. All you care about is the goddamn money. Okay, anyway, JusticeDemocrats.com. Now, let's go to the press attacking Bernie Sanders, okay? All right, here we go. Slate is supposed to be a relatively progressive outlet in the media, but they've written a curious piece about Bernie Sanders' podcast. He's got the Bernie Sanders Show. I did a story about it recently, and I noted that it was incredibly popular on Facebook. It's gotten millions upon millions, tens of millions of views. It's only been 4 shows, and it's a stunning success. And I wondered why the media wasn't talking about what a success it is. I mean, these are the guys who talked about Trump TV. Oh my God, what if Trump comes, loses, and he does Trump TV? Oh, Trump TV, Trump TV, right? Well, here was Bernie Sanders doing a show, and it was, if you're talking about viewers, I mean, he had more viewers than most of the primetime broadcasts on television. Isn't that amazing? He's just doing it on Facebook. Now he's turned it into a podcast, but don't worry, Slate's going to write about it. And Adam Ragusa, presumably, sorry, I have a tough name too, Adam. Notes right in the beginning, great, look at this. Within a week of its release earlier this month, Bernie Sanders' podcast had climbed to the number 2 slot on iTunes. So they go from Facebook Live to iTunes, they're immediately crushing all those giant podcasts. They leapfrog them right away, go to number 2. Oh, finally, someone in the media is going to write a good piece about this, right? So right after that, he says, now I'm not sure what that means, but I think it's significant, certainly more significant than the show itself, which is almost as intellectually lazy as it is technically incompetent. Uh-oh, here we go again. Now, if I saw a podcast that went from nothing to, in the first week, number 2, I would think they must be doing something right. I wonder what it is that they're doing right and what I should write about because it's on fire. No. If we're in Washington and we're in the media, now we have to criticize Bernie Sanders no matter where we work. And so we have to call him incompetent and intellectually lazy. Now, look, you want to criticize the production quality. They're not in the TV business. They're not, you know, in the media business overall. And yes, it has some spotty audio. That's a perfectly fair criticism and not a big deal. But really a tiny part of the story. No. If you think that that was all and I'm mad about that, buckle up. Here we go. Almost every sentence in the article is dripping with disdain and nothing but wall-to-wall criticism, as usual. So here we go. He says, a popular talk show that's hosted and editorially controlled by a current government official is something we normally expect from a Latin American dictatorship, such as the late Hugo Chavez's hilarious and terrifying A lo Presidente. That didn't take long, did it? Right away, boom, he compares him to a dictator for just doing a podcast. Now you're a dictator if you do a podcast, and compares him to Hugo Chavez. Now he could say, look, I'm generally liberal, but you know this is unacceptable, and you know if you're in the media, you have to earn your stripes by working for a giant corporation or doing whatever I did, okay? And you can't just go in there and become the number 2 podcast. Otherwise, I'll call you a dictator. How dare you, right? Okay, better man, I got you. So then Adam says, though I suppose the use of state TV or radio for such a program is theoretically a more despotic move than offering the same sort of thing for download on the internet. Well, my bad, Adam turns out to be merciful. He just characterized Bernie Sanders as slightly less despotic than a person he described as a dictator, Hugo Chavez, okay? So Hugo Chavez had a whole host of issues. I would never, ever, ever compare him to Bernie Sanders because that makes no sense. But because he has a successful podcast, he has earned the ire of the media. Well, then you're like Hugo Chavez. You both at some point did something in the media and you both breathe air. I rest my case, drop the mic, even if it's a lavalier mic. Okay. Yeah, but Bernie has been in the media all along. Every week he did an hour with Tom Harmon on the radio. Was he Hugo Chavez back then? No, now he's got power. He's the most popular senator in the country. We've got to tear him to shreds. All of a sudden he's Hugo Chavez. Bernie Sanders even did a public access show back when he was in Vermont. Was he Hugo Chavez then? No, that's all the times that he's done all these different radio, TV shows, etc. Not a dictator then. Now you're popular? No, you're a dictator doing a podcast. I mean, it's as if he murdered people, as if he like tortured them. He's just doing a podcast for Christ's sake. All right. Wait, my bad again. Look at this. Adam turns out to be merciful again. He says, quote, also, Bernie Sanders is not a dictator. Oh, well, thank you for pointing that out. This is three dictator references I've just read to you. And this is all right in the beginning of the article, but I think the overall article, you'd have to do a count, 4, 5, 6. I don't know how many times he compared him to a dictator, but he says he's not, to be fair. I mean, what a weird thing. Could you imagine if I said, pick a name, I don't know, let's say Adam. Now, look, to be fair, Adam is not a child molester. That sounded harsh, didn't it? But why? Why, Adam? Why do you come and watch a guy's podcast instead of talking about how successful it is? All of a sudden, you're saying, I guess he's not a dictator. I mean, I just compared him to one. I compared him to a tyrant, a despot, and a dictator. And then I said, well, I mean, I guess technically he's not a dictator. Did I say he was a dictator? Technically, I said he wasn't. And right after that, he says, he's an independent junior senator from a tiny state who caucuses with the minority party. More disdain. But we've already had another guy make the leap from the popular show host, producer to commander in chief. And did that make the United States feel more or less like Venezuela to you? So now he's comparing him to Donald Trump, who did a cheesy reality show. But as you're about to see, he's going to say the Bernie Sanders show is boring because it talks about policy. Policy. Why would anybody care about that? Well, apparently a lot of people would, because that's why it's so popular. No, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm just going to say, no, he's like a reality show clown. I'm now going to compare him to Donald Trump and says Donald Trump's a bad guy. Well, he's probably like Hugo Chavez. And so there it is. I proved my case. Bernie Sanders is like Hugo Chavez. Can you believe this? I mean, this is insanity. But they hate him. They hate him. Adam doesn't think he hates him. Adam thinks he's a liberal. And my guess, I don't know. I don't want to speak for him. Although later he talked about how money in politics might be a good thing. But in Washington, the groupthink is, can't have Bernie, can't have Bernie, dangerous. That guy would change things. Ooh, status quo, I love it. I want to hug it. Oh, I love status quo so much. Okay. He then goes on and describes the podcast as, quote, comfortable, boring listening. Policy. Nobody in Washington wants to hear about policy. And he talked to Bill Nye about science. Boring. Jane Mayer about money and politics and the Koch brothers. Boring. Come on, man. You haven't even done a single podcast on a missing plane. Sky. And what did you think about Trump's last tweet? I don't even know. You're so boring. But Adam, did you ever consider that going from nothing to the number two podcast maybe is not boring? To all the people who love it. Might that have made a slightly more interesting story than the fact that you and your friends in Washington are so bored by Bernie Sanders and his dictatorial talk about fixing the country, Medicare for all and education for everybody. Boring, dictator. Okay. Then he challenges you guys because he's mad at you for making it such a popular podcast. And he says, are you really so insecure in your worldview that you need to listen to the two people uncritically reinforce it for half an hour each week? Referring to Bernie Sanders and the people that he is interviewing. Now, this is ironic from the media that listens to cable news 24/7, thinks cable news is the only thing relevant on the planet. And all, what do? They reinforce the establishment point of view. But if you ask the Adams of the world, oh, no way, man. No, those Don Lemon, critical thinker, award-winning journalist, does neutrality right down the middle. Republicans said this, but then Democrats said that. The Pentagon said this, and then the Pentagon said that. Oh, well, that is compelling. My bad. Who would want to listen to a podcast on policy to reinforce your views when we could pretend that we are not reinforcing the establishment by doing their propaganda 24/7 on cable news? Gee, I wonder why people are looking for an alternative. I can't quite figure it out. Why don't I just be disdainful of it instead? But he admits that he is flummoxed. He says, I come back to my fundamental bewilderment about the popularity of the Bernie Sanders show. See, but Adam, right there, okay, fine, this was near the very end of the article. I'm like, oh, thanks God, finally, at least some intellectual curiosity. What I would have written the whole article about. Oh my God, how did this get to number two? Maybe I would ask some of the people who listen to it, what do you like about it? They're on Facebook, you can see it. They're on iTunes, they're on all these different places. You could, if you're a journalist, you could call them up. Hey, what fascinated you so much about this? Does he go in that direction? Of course not. No, he goes on to say, you shouldn't listen to it, and it's your fault for puzzling him like this by finding it popular. He says, how is it that a political PR team, noticeably unschooled in the ways of audio production, is presently boxing with the likes of NPR at the top of the iTunes charts? I mean, I do declare all my good friends in Washington love NPR. The banjos are fantastic, and generally they've been neutered, so they say that Republicans say this and Democrats say that. How could he be doing better than my neutral friends at NPR? I do declare I am bewildered. A despot like Bernie Sanders. So popular. Okay. We're near the end here, although this is fun. He says, podcasting and the internet in general has diminished the role of gatekeepers, and that's mostly a good thing. He doesn't believe that at all, as you're about to find out. But just because politicians can now bypass the media filter, a little bit more bitterness right there, and talk to you directly doesn't mean you should listen. At least not in the numbers that would propel a podcast to the iTunes top 10. What a wonderful conclusion. Oh, I figured it out. Why is this so popular? It's your fault. You shouldn't be listening to it in the first place. I mean, not in the top 10, not next to my beloved other mainstream media outlets. Oh, God, you and your wanting to talk to progressives and actually have it be popular and talk about policy. I've declared boring and technically incompetent. Stop listening to it. Stop listening to it right now. Okay. Finally, he says, those subscribers who swarmed in on Sanders' name alone might not keep with the show once they actually listen to it. The hubris is oozing out of every pore. So, I mean, I do declare, it's very popular now, but it's, of course, it's just brand name. You just went to it because it says Bernie Sanders. I mean, you people are thoughtless, the ones that look for policy, when you should be chasing after the latest tweet or whatever that happened with Trump lately, like my friends on cable news do. You guys, once you actually listen to his ideas, of course you will then stop watching this and listening to it, because me and all my friends in Washington are very much opposed to it. So, know your role and hurry up and stop listening to Bernie Sanders already. But Adam, we've now had a couple of years to listen to Bernie Sanders, and guess what happened? He is, according to polling, not my opinion, the most popular senator in the entire country. Out of 100 senators, he is number one. Did that not give you pause that perhaps people like listening to him? Remember when everybody in the media declared his speeches boring on the campaign trail, but tens of thousands of people showed up anyway? Remember when he closed a 60-point lead on Hillary Clinton? As you guys said, his hair was too rumpled and his appearance was not good enough, and then he didn't have enough name recognition back then. Now you say it's all because of name recognition. You've tried to find excuse after excuse after excuse. Perhaps you should consider one other option. People really like what he has to say. They actually agree with his policy positions, and almost no one else is saying it. And since they're thirsty and hungry for it, when Bernie Sanders says it, even in a way that you don't find technically competent enough, or it has not scintillated you enough, they still love it. Perhaps you should have written a story about that instead of what you and your good friends in the media think about it and how they find it incompetent and unacceptable. And perhaps instead of yelling at the audience to stop listening to Bernie Sanders, you should have started listening to Bernie Sanders, even if you don't agree with him, to try to figure out what it is that people love so much. But you never made that effort. Instead, you wrote this, and my guess is that the Sanders followers will have as much disdain for your type of journalism as that you do for Bernie Sanders' podcast. And given what you've written, it is well earned, Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. A couple of excellent tweets for you guys. Chris Huck, who actually works for us in Pittsburgh, but I'm going to read it anyway because it's a really good tweet, says, I would hope that if I gave someone $11 million, they would say super nice things about me too. Well, Chris, very fair, very fair. That's exactly what's wrong with the political system, but true enough. Mary with an excellent tweet. She says, pretty sure FDR did the same thing. His fireside chats, anyone? Was FDR a dictator when he did the fireside chats? God damn it, I wish I thought of that, Mary, before I did the segment. Great point. Get Mary a t-shirt from shoptyt.com. Wonderful stuff. And Smoot says it's not intelligent for any corporate media outlet to attack the most popular politician in the US. When it's anyone but Bernie, they are slavishly, obsequiously complimentary of those politicians. When Bush was popular for a minute and a half, all the press was like, oh my God, George W. Bush, what a genius. But no matter what Bernie does and how popular he is, or because he's so popular, they got to tear him down. And it's really disappointing coming from Slate. I mean, what in the world's going on at Slate? They should be better than that. All right, anyway, donors to our journalism campaign, where we hope we're doing better, is $15 from Sam in South Carolina, $50 from Ruth in Michigan, and $127 from Crystal in Michigan. Guys, all those donations are why we work for you and not for any of these other interests involved. Okay, so thank you guys. All right, let's go on to Alex Jones. Oh boy. Okay, Alex Jones is going through a custody trial for his kids. Now, I told you earlier when we covered this that I feel bad. I think all these divorce proceedings or custody trials are really, really tough. Both sides get oftentimes get mean or weird. But when you're talking about Alex Jones getting weird, it gets real weird. And so I thought the most relevant part was the one we shared with you a couple of days ago when his lawyer admitted that he's a quote performance artist. I wish of all the performance arts, perhaps he chose miming instead, but he didn't. He decided that he was going to be an actor pretending to be a right winger who cares a lot. On his way to court after that, he did this rambling video as usual, where he would say, now I'm not a performance artist, I really mean it, but I mean, I am an artist, and I mean, I want my lawyer to win the case, so I'm a clown and I act like it, but on the other hand, I'm serious, I really think there's a global conspiracy of lizards or whatever it is that I made up to yesterday. So that's usual Alex Jones stuff. Now, we go to the unusual, because we found out new facts about Alex Jones that are disturbing. First of all, we came up a little bit during the proceedings, the Young Turks did, and the judge apparently decided that they should not show any Young Turks videos in the trial. Well, makes sense. If the jury saw it, they'd of course be full of Young Turks fans, because they're Americans, and they might want to rule against Alex Jones. I don't know that that was really the basis for her decision, but Judge Naranjo said, did not approve of the showing the jury a video clip of a confusing scene in which Jones and Roger Stone, the longtime Trump confidant, interrupted live coverage of the 2016 Republican National Convention in Cleveland by left-wing news show called The Young Turks. So don't inflame the jury, they're probably all TYT Army anyway. If you let them know that Alex Jones attacked us, then poor guy would stand no chance. We understand that. That seems like a fair decision on the part of the judge. Okay. Again, not positive that's why she ruled that way. Okay. Now, here's the other fun things we found out about Alex Jones. And I'm going to try to keep it to a minimum here, because it's a target-rich environment. Among the other videos Newman wanted to show, that is his wife's attorney, to show of Jones was one in which Jones and his son tossed darts at a photo of Hillary Clinton that was placed on a dartboard. Now, people are making some hay out of this, and I think that that's unfortunate. I wouldn't go in that direction. But not the end of the world. So let's see if it gets worse. Jones allegedly instructed his children to record their mother's behavior to help him in his custody fight. Now, see, that's ugly. That's exactly what I was talking about, where these things get brutal on both sides. And obviously, she's made some allegations against him. He's trying to turn the kids against her, and in fact, even record her and then pass it on to their dad. Ugh. Don't do that, man. Don't do that. Don't use the kids like that. And that sounds like a bit of a conspiracy. Okay. Now, all right, now that's standard fare for custody stuff. Not standard fare, pretty bad stuff, but okay, let's move on. I don't want to talk about the kids or the family too much. I care about Alex Jones only because, by the way, the President of the United States now listens to this madman and apparently thinks that he's saying things that are true. So that's where I think the relevance of the story comes in. So according to Newman, again, the lawyer for the wife here, Jones was so inattentive to his own children that he once forgot what grades they were in. Even more strangely, Jones claimed he forgot this information because he had just eaten a large bowl of chili for lunch. Again, ignore the kids part, don't worry about it. Okay? But you don't know what grade they're in? Could be 7th, it could be 2nd or 12th. I'm not positive, but they might be in college or not exist. But either way, I don't remember. Okay, that's fine. All right, that's not fine. That's horrible. I can't believe you don't know what grade your kids are in. Okay, but anyway, why did you forget, Mr. Jones? Oh, well, obviously chili. I mean, right there, I'd end the trial. I'd be like, okay, well, she gets the kids. We're moving on. What do you mean she gets the kids? That's ground rage. I'll take my shirt off right now. But Alex, you say you can't remember things because you ate a bowl of chili. I mean, God forbid you eat New England clam chowder. Then what's going to happen to the kids? Are you going to forget where you left the kids? I mean, no, no. If that's your answer for forgetting things, that is deeply disturbing. Anyway, they can do, the kids is between them. We can't have the president of the United States, the guy with his finger on the nuclear trigger, listening to a madman like this, but it's about to get worse. Newman played the jury the video of Jones ripping off his clothes to demonstrate his super male virility during an InfoWars broadcast. What? Now, I know he takes off his shirt. He did it with us, okay? And I don't know if it was the first time he ever did it when he did it with us. Now, he was so mad at us that he stripped his shirt off. You know what? Let's go to that video for a second. Let's have a little bit of fun here. Let's go to video three when he was ranting against us. Watch.
I mean, I saw a video yesterday where the young turds were saying that they are the number one internet news show. I mean, I'm on over 100 AM and FM stations, XM. But on the internet, just look at my website on Alexa compared to their website. Look at my videos, more views. I mean, you're full of crap. I'm number one in alternative media, period, globally. Even Rolling Stone, New York Magazine, all they've done actuaries. Like, I saw the Young Turks website last night. I was looking at some YouTube videos. Of course.
So he goes on and on, and then he goes back to a clip where he took his shirt off. I mean, we had a ton of fun with it. Then we showed our numbers versus his numbers. Our lead over him is so large, it's embarrassing. But you know, the media, they're like, oh, what? I heard Trump listens to him. Okay, he's relevant. You guys, I don't know. What? Anyway, all that stuff is water on the bridge. Who cares about that? I just like that he was like, all right, now I'm going to do a video against the Young Turks. Okay, now what's the first step? Should I go on Facebook Live or YouTube Live? Which camera should I look at? No. Right, first step, take your shirt off. So, turns out, by the way, Alex, if you'd like to be anywhere near as large as us, as us online. Okay, step one, keep your shirt on. All right, so we're going to go to a much worse video in a second. Hold, but get a load of this. The lawyer also said that Jones would regularly take off his clothes when he went with Kelly Jones to joint family therapy sessions. What? They're in therapy. They're like, well, look, she makes a good point. On the other hand, super male virility. Take the shirt off, take the pants off. Now wait, I just said take the pants off. No, he's not going to take his pants off. I mean, that's ridiculous, right? Watch.
So I'll pull whatever stunt I've got to here. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Should I get completely naked? No, there's a family audience. I'm just going to take my shirt off. Hey, you will notice I've lost even more weight. It's been a slow process. InfoWarsLife.com. We've got the great DNA Force back in stock. We've got the great super male vitality back in stock. I tell you, I've done the same amount of exercises as I ever did, but taking the great things that Mother Nature has created and concentrating on my super male vitality has really helped me lose a ton of weight. As you can see right here. Now, again, I was not planning this tonight, but I have lost a lot of weight. If you compare this to past videos.
I should have given a stronger warning. And then he wonders why people don't take him seriously. Well, first of all, you think that aliens and Satan are working together to dominate the world, and that the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers are going to kill 90% of us. Third of all, you just took your pants off. So if you'd like to get taken a little bit more seriously, perhaps at least keep the pants on. What's hilarious is that he lives in such an alternative reality that he thinks that he actually has a good body. So that's why I say, oh, wait till I show him this. This is a killer body. It's amazing. Oh, man, super male virility. Okay. We have told him countless times, and he thinks we're against him, but we're trying to help you out, brother. Keep the shirt on and definitely keep the pants on. This is not going to go well for him in trial. How is this trial not over already? How was there not a gavel the minute the judge saw the him take his pants off on tape? But all right, we'll see, we'll see. And again, I have no opinion on the actual facts of the family relationships. God bless. I hope the kids are okay. All right, when we come back, good news for you guys, and you are going to love our opponent's defense of why they think we should not have change. I told you about this group called Common Cause who's fighting against change while pretending to be progressives. Oh, their answers are hilarious. We will show you when we come back. All right, back on the Young Turks, a couple of quick tweets. As usual, DMore315 says, Alex Jones' argument is the Twinkie defense of the child custody cases. It's true, I've never heard of the chili defense before. Jefferson Smith says, typical Alex Jones, he doesn't even have the common decency to come up with a good lie. Okay, I like that. And then now I'm going to some donors for our journalism campaign. There's only 9 days left, guys. I'm definitely worried that we're not going to hit two, but 50 bucks from Miguel in California, 50 bucks from Pierre in West Virginia, and 50 bucks from Chris in Georgia. Thank you so much, guys. Super appreciate it. Now, let me give you the good news from Hawaii. Okay, here we go. Notes in order. Yep. So Wolfpack, of course, is busy trying to get a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics, to get free and fair elections, to have a convention to do so. Now, that is an Article 5 convention. It's in the Constitution. It says there's two ways to get to get an amendment. One is through Congress. Good luck. You're going to get 2/3 of this Congress. Or 2/3 of the states to call for a convention where you propose an amendment. So we're going to the states. So now we go to Hawaii. And there we are met with a wall of lobbyists. So now you would think, okay, I remember in New Jersey, it was the Koch brothers lobbyists that you guys had to fight and a lot of right wingers. Well, in Hawaii, it is so-called progressive groups that have sent their lobbyists because apparently they don't want change either. Oh my God, what if we had change? Oh, convention would bring change. Oh, hand wringing. Good news about Hawaii is, unlike in New Mexico, they have principal politicians. I'm sorry, that's not fair to New Mexico. There's a wonderful politicians in New Mexico, and we passed one of the in one of the houses in New Mexico. But in one of the other houses, the lobbyists convinced them to not put it up for a vote. So it depends on the person. But in Hawaii, in the Senate side, bunch of great folks in this committee who were there. Who actually, this is what I love about it. They actually took the time to hear both sides out. Now we had our volunteers, citizens who live in Hawaii. So Eric Schrager, for example, is a Navy vet, and here's one of the things that he said.
As a commissioned officer in the U.S. Navy for over 30 years, I proudly upheld the oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. A powerful domestic enemy has been identified. It is the influence of big money in our government. Large donations to political campaigns and the quid pro quo evidenced by government action and inaction indicates that our democracy is being subverted.
Now, that is not a controversial position. Close to 90% of Americans agree that money is a corrupting influence on politics. And you would think that we'd have an easier time of it, but no, they're going to run into those aforementioned lobbyists. First, I'm just showing you one, but we had many volunteers there testifying, including Morgan Bonet, who's a mechanical engineer with NASA Telescope. Real Americans that are out there fighting the good fight. Well, they ran into some folks from the other side. But what was great is that the senators had a back and forth and they heard him out. One of the real heroes of this story, and I want to show you who he is. Let's go to graphic 45 here. Senator Gilbert Keith Agaron. He is one of the senators from Hawaii. And what I like about him is that he's got an open mind. And in that committee, even the one person who voted against it asked great questions. But Agaron listened, asked thoughtful questions and did exactly what you're supposed to do in a democracy, have a vote. I'll just give you a small clip from Agaron here, but it's a good point.
Isn't sort of the arguments that are being made kind of fundamentally distrusting the public then?
See, I love that because when the other side says, well, I mean, if you have a convention, I mean, all of a sudden it's not Congress that's in charge. You went around them, you went to the states. Okay, but that's why it's in the Constitution, because we thought maybe Washington would get too corrupt, right? Second of all, you say, oh, well, I mean, imagine if the right wing had a convention. Imagine if the right wing voted. Imagine if the right wing could participate in Congress. Well, when you say, if the right wing can do it, we shouldn't do it at all, that is distrusting the public opinion. That means you don't really believe in democracy. Now, he put it more gently and in a more intellectual light, and I appreciate it. But it's a great, great point. But we're nowhere near done yet. Now we're going to go to Senator Laura Thielen. She's going to be talking. Now, there's two people here. They are, in fact, lobbyists. They're for the ACLU and Common Cause. So you might be surprised by the ACLU position, and Common Cause you won't be surprised for. They're the group pretending to be progressive who doesn't want a convention, who hasn't done anything to try to actually get an amendment to get money out of politics. And of course, they're fighting anyone trying to do that in reality, and here in this committee in Hawaii. So let's watch.
So I guess what I want to ask is, for your two organizations, if you don't support the Constitutional Convention, what are your plans to getting the ruling of Citizen United overturned?
You want to play?
Yeah, so actually the ACLU does not necessarily oppose everything about the ruling in Citizens United. It's an unpopular position, but we do support parts of it. It's a very complicated 184-page decision that I have not read since law school. Please don't quiz me on it. But our position is a little bit more nuanced than I think some of the other organizations in the room. So I think Corey might be able to better answer your questions.
Yes. We are opposed to Citizens United. And in fact, we've worked with you folks in the past to pass two resolutions calling on Congress to show us, you know, to introduce an amendment that way, which is what we do support. So we are ahead of the curve, and we are working across with our sister chapters and with other organizations to go that route as well. It's not the fastest route. It's, you know, given the political climate in Congress, lawmaking in general is not, you know, fastest route in anything. But like with other past amendments in the past, right, whether it's women's voting or whatnot, it took many, many years, many voices, and persistence and not giving up.
But I mean, it is a pretty powerful argument that given Citizens United, the influence of money on campaigns is bigger than ever, and on policy outcomes, and how do we rely on, you know, Congress to change a law as opposed to going directly to people?
Well, I mean, for us, Common Cause, campaign finance reform is not just a single issue, it's a multi-pronged issue. So I just don't think that the Article 5 convention is the silver bullet that some folks are making it out to be.
So Senator Thielen did not vote with us, but I really appreciated her intellectual honesty. So unfortunately, there are some representatives in other states that don't exhibit that, and we call that out too. And oftentimes they don't allow a vote, and they don't really want a debate on this issue. But I thought Senator Thielen did a great job there in asking these questions. So when she asked the ACLU, what was the answer she got? Oh, actually, the ACLU is in favor of Citizens United, although that particular person had not read the decision, apparently. That's unfortunate. I don't know if you knew that. Then when you went to the Common Cause lobbyist, well, she said that they were ahead of the curve in fighting to get money out of politics. Really? How so? Because the senator asked you, how are you doing it? Well, we're asking Congress. Oh, really? How's that going? Well, we've been fighting on this issue for 40 years. How is that going? So there is no actual plan by Common Cause to get money out of politics. They are not fighting actively in Congress through any other means. What are they doing? They're fighting against the one path that could actually get us there, the convention, because they say, oh, well, it's not a silver bullet. It's not a silver bullet. It's not magic. I mean, look, these things take a long time. Let's just sit around for another couple of decades and see what happens. We didn't say it was a silver bullet. We said, unfortunately, it is a path that is available to us when everything else is foreclosed. And it is obviously so, and you guys know it because you're not really doing anything about it anyway. Okay, now we go to a name you might recognize, Senator Gabbard. Remember, this is Hawaii. It is Senator Mike Gabbard. Yes, the father of Tulsi Gabbard. He has a very interesting conversation with these same folks. Let's watch.
Every time we begin our session and during session, we talk about having a conversation about the 3,000 plus bills every year that are introduced, right? And so what I'm hearing, and you mentioned a silver bullet. I didn't pick up on that from the people who were testifying to revert to the original version. But what I'm hearing is, what's wrong with having this conversation? this national conversation? What's wrong with having this conversation? Is there a lack of faith in the democracy, this wonderful country that we live in, to have the conversation?
Senator, I think that's a great question, and I think both my organization and Corey's would agree that the conversation is always a good thing, and to be talking about the political influence of money is especially important in this day and age and what we're seeing at the federal level. So I think the conversation is very important. A convention is very different from a conversation. A convention would change our Constitution upon which this country is built.
Well, you see, when you amend the Constitution, yes, it is an amendment, right? So that changes it. For example, the 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments to the Constitution changed the Constitution so that African Americans could be considered citizens. The first amendment changed the Constitution so we could have freedom of speech, freedom of press, assembly, etc. The things that the ACLU, I thought, was structured to fight for. So she's like, I mean, we can have a conversation as long as we don't do anything about it. God forbid we should do what's in the Constitution. Remember the ACLU for the Constitution. Curious. So I want to give a shout out to Senator Mike Gabbard again. He's been an absolute hero on this, fighting for this for 3 years, asking great questions, probing, again, intellectual honesty, having a real debate, thinking it through, coming to his own conclusions. Wonderful, and voted in favor of it again here. In this committee hearing. And finally, we go to Carl Rhodes, Senator Rhodes, with a great question to the Common Cause lobbyist, and wait till you get a load of her answer.
There's also just a sense of nothing ventured, nothing gained. You're gonna take a risk. If we don't do anything, we take a risk. If we do something, we take a risk. But I'm looking for the risk, for the downside risk, and I don't know if I see it. Would you care to comment on that?
I'll try. Yeah, I mean, it is just basically a complicated issue, and there is risks either way. I agree. But for us, it's weighing these risks. Do we want to risk potentially rewriting the whole Constitution again? This is what happened with our founding fathers, with the...
Yeah, but that turned out so badly. I mean, you know.
Well, it depends who you ask, right?
Does it? Oh my God, does it depend who you ask? So their big fear tactic is, oh my God, we had one constitutional convention, and it created the United States Constitution, the greatest document ever written. Well, depends on who you ask. Does it? So think about it. First of all, they're wrong on the facts as usual. Again, it's amazing how little research that they do. The Constitutional Convention was actually asked for by the states. They knew that they had a problem with the Articles of Confederation. A majority of the states asked to rewrite the document. So it is a myth that they went rogue and rewrote it, etc. And in fact, it had to get ratified. New York did not allow for their delegates, for example, to overturn the whole Constitution. So in the beginning, they voted no within the convention. And Alexander Hamilton, which represented New York, signed as a citizen and not as a delegate from New York. And New York later had to ratify it. It went through a process. They don't have their history right at all. Second of all, it was a constitutional convention. And again, the states asked for it to be that. An Article 5 convention is totally different. It is for the purpose of an amendment. I would say they know that and they're being misleading, but there's some chance they don't even know that. They don't know the basics of what they're arguing about. The Article 5 convention is part of the Constitution. Remember, the founding fathers wrote the Constitution and they said, hey, we are revolutionaries, so we're going to build revolution into the document. We're going to give you several different ways to amend this document. And one of them is an Article 5 convention where you propose specific amendments. So she says, well, I don't know, that sounds scary. The Constitution sounds pretty scary. Now, she said both sides do have problems. What's the other side? The other side is the disaster that we live in today, where money has completely taken over politics, where we have legalized bribery, where they say such absurd things as corporations are human beings and money is speech. And we've all agreed to these fantasies. Of course, 90% of us have not, but Congress has. We're bathed in corruption right now. We've lost our democracy. And they say, but what if something scary happens? No, something scary already happened. And then when asked about the Constitution, well, I don't know, it could go either way. I mean, some would say that it didn't turn out well. I would argue that it turned out really, really well. And you want to foreclose that option? I think that is crazy. Luckily, the senators from Hawaii there in that committee agreed. Let me show Senator Karl Rhodes, by the way, another hero, founding fathers and mothers who voted for this resolution. Okay, now it goes to the full Senate. So Hawaii@wolf-pack.com, get in the fight. Okay, so you see that those guys that I showed you from our side, they're not paid lobbyists, they're volunteers. You get involved in this, you go speak to senators, and you can beat those lobbyists. Warriors always beat mercenaries. You actually care. You care to learn the facts. That's why you win. That's why you win whenever there's a vote. We're going to win in Hawaii. We're going to go and win in the Senate. And then they're going to go to a committee. And I hope that we pass the whole state so that I can give credit to the entire legislation and legislators of Hawaii. And it is one of the most progressive states. And of course, it should be on board for real change and to get money out of politics and to get free and fair elections. We're on that road thanks to Senator Keith Agarwal and the others. So let's keep it going. Hawaii@wolf-pack.com. Let's win. I told you we could do it, and we're in the middle of doing it right now. Young Turks.